everyone knows that like awkward nerdy t-shirt that says like Mondays are the worst. I hate Mondays. My personal opinion though is that I think Tuesdays are the worst. Because, okay, Monday, you're already, like, geared up. Like, you know the week is starting. Like, everyone else says you're going to be in a slump. But, like, the week's just starting. It's a fresh week. It's kind of like the first day of school. Like, you come in and you're excited to start the week. But then by Tuesday, it's like, okay, I had my awesome weekend. Really fun. Then, like, Sunday, Monday, it was ready to start the week. And, like, then we got to Tuesday and it's like, okay, now the week's like a little bit dragging. And like anyone who's in Stern, I don't know if this is the same feeling universally, but like by the time it's Wednesday, it's Shabbos, because Wednesday is the day before Thursday. And on Thursday, you guys are out of towners, but us in towners, like we're already on our way home because it's Shabbos. So Wednesday is Shabbos. So Tuesday is just awkwardly in the middle. I think that the month of Cheshvan, first of all, Chodesh Tov, the month of Cheshvan or Mar Cheshvan is pretty much a Tuesday. It's, you've just finished the amazing month of Elul, and then you've powered through the Yomim Noraim, and you've gotten through Tishrei, and all, like, the last licks, like, you get through Hoshana Rabbah, and Shmini Atzeret, and Sivos Torah, and Shabbos Bereishis, and then, there's nothing. Like, then you get to Cheshvan, there's no holidays, there's not even any fast days, like nothing sad we can even hold on to. It's just blah. Like it's right there. It's nothing. There's nothing in it. There's a common misconception that that's why it's called Mar Cheshvan. Actually not true. People say like, oh, it's bitter Cheshvan. Not true. Mar Cheshvan and Cheshvan are just two different names, and we are unclear which one we're supposed to use, because a lot of the common texts from which we decipher our months, such as like the listings in Ezra and Nehemiah, go back and they don't clearly speak about Cheshvan. We have a mention of Mar Cheshvan in the Zohar. We have different mentions, different places. So we just don't totally know what to call Cheshvan. So on more technical documents, we will use the name Mar Cheshvan, but we more colloquially refer to it as Cheshvan. It's not because it's a bitter month. However, I wanted to look at some of the things that happen in Cheshvan and say, like, is it true? Is it really just a month of, like, nothing? Is it totally blah? And if so, how can that be? What are we supposed to gain from the month of Cheshvan? So let's look at a number of the things that we know did happen in Cheshvan. Because right now we said there's nothing in it. It's empty. There's nothing there. However, there are a number of events that we know did happen in Cheshvan. So if we look at the first source on our source sheet, in Bereishis, it says, B'shana shishmeo shana l'chayei noach, b'chodesh hashini, b'shivasar yom l'chodesh b'yom hazeh nifku'u kol hamayanot tehom rabah, v'arba'ot hashamayim niftachu. The first thing that we know happened in Cheshvan, it is brought down in the Mefarshim, that the Mabul started in Cheshvan. That it says that Noach and his family, as we'll read in this week's Parsha, they all loaded up into the Teva. And then when they were all in and all the animals were in, the Mabul began. And it is brought down that that was in the month of Cheshvan. So the first thing that we remember is the Mabul started to destroy the entire world in Cheshvan. Next thing that we have is again in Sefer Bereishis, but in a number of parashiot from now, we have Vatamat Rachel, Vatikaber, Vatarach Efrata, Hu Beit Lechem. I tried to look where we know when all the different yartzeits are. Couldn't find it. But we're all just going to have to trust the common understanding that the yartzeit of Rachel Imenu, that we know Rachel died in childbirth, she was giving birth to her son Binyamin, she experienced a terrible childbirth, and on the way back, B'derach Beit Lechem, Rachel died on the road, and she was buried there. And we know that there are beautiful mefarshim about why she had to be buried on the road. But it's brought down that that death of Rachel Imenu happened on the 11th of Cheshvan, on Yud Aleph Cheshvan. So two events so far. The Mabul started, Rachel Imenu passed away, and then we have one more that's brought down. If we look in the Pesik Darabati, which is a Midrash, it says, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Besrim v'chamisha b'kislev, nigmira melechad ha-mishkan. The building of the Mishkan was finished on the on the 25th of Kislev. However, they didn't dedicate the Mishkan until the month of Nisan, after which Moshe had the Yemei HaMiluim, where he took them down and he put them up. And in Nisan, the Mishkan was dedicated. Why was that? The Midrash says that because Hashem wanted the Mishkan to be dedicated in the month in which Yitzchak was born. The month of Yitzchak is the month of Nisan, so therefore Hashem held off the dedication from Kislev to Nisan. So Kislev felt like it had lost out. Lav mahu v'tashlim amar kadosh baruch hu halai l'shalim lo ma shilim lo kadosh baruch hu chanukah b'chashmonai. So how did Hashem repay Kislev? During the time of the Chashmonaim in the story of Hanukkah, the Mishkan, the Beis HaMikdash, was rededicated during the month of Kislev. So Kislev was when they finished building the Mishkan. It was dedicated in Nisan. Kislev felt left out, so Hashem made it up to them in the time of the Chashmonaim. So let's move on. Af Shlomo gamar melechad hamikdash b'chodesh mar chashvan. But Shlomo, when Shlomo was building his Beis HaMikdash, the first Beis HaMikdash, the work on the Mikdash was finished in Chodesh Mar Chashvan, in the month that we are entering into right now. V'na'aseh na'ul shnei masar Chodesh. And the Beis HaMikdash was locked up. It sat unused for the first 12 months. V'ha'alukim shechashav la'ariv simchas Beis HaMikdash b'chodesh shenolad bo Avraham. Because Hashem wanted to dedicate the Beis HaMikdash in the month that Avraham was born, that is the month of Tishrei. Hifsid mar chashvan lav amar hakadosh baruch hu alai l'shalim lo v'tashlim kol hamelacha. So Hashem says, Chashvan, I owe you one. I'm going to repay you. I'll repay you when all of the work is done. That is an allusion to that the third Beis HaMikdash, our third and Emir Tzashem final Beis HaMikdash, will be dedicated during the month of Mar Chashvan. So far we've discussed three events or three mentions of Mar Chashvan. And the first two seem to pretty strongly agree with our assumptions about Chashvan, that it's a pretty negative month. And I didn't bring all of them, but there are a number of other mentions of Chashvan that are extremely negative. Real tragedies that happen during the month of Chashvan up until modern times. So according to the first two, the Mabel starting, the destruction of the entire world, the death of Rachel Imenu, one of our dear Imahu, it doesn't seem like this month has gotten any much better the more we looked into it. However, the third mention really throws us for a loop. If it's such a negative month, it's so full of nothing, it's so blah, why will the third Beis HaMikdash be dedicated during the month of Chashvan? And we're not going to say because Hashem owes them one. Hashem doesn't owe anyone anything. Hashem especially does not owe the month anything. So what we're going to look into is what is the significance of Chashvan? We can't accept there is just a blah, negative month. Hashem would not give us that. Why do we have the month of Chashvan? To understand the deeper essence of the month of Chashvan, I want to begin in a very famous conversation that's rooted in Bereishis Rabbah. The conversation is going among the Rabbanim of what is the most inclusive pasuk in the Torah, not inclusive like we talk about inclusive today. Baruch Hashem, I worked for Yachad for many years. This is not talking about the inclusive the Yachad promotes. This is which pasuk in the Torah can encompass the most of Torah. Which pasuk in the Torah can pretty much include everything else within it. So it says in Bereishis Rabbah, Ben Azai Omer, Zeh Sefer Toldos Adam. He goes for an easy one. He says, let's take the pasuk right from the beginning of the Torah. Zeh Sefer Toldos Adam. This is the Sefer that discusses the descendants of Adam. It's really a cheap shot, because obviously that includes the entire Torah. We are all descendants of Adam and Chava. So therefore, saying, Zeh Sefer Toldos Adam, this is the book for the descendants of Adam. Okay. Rabbi Akiva Omer, V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. Rabbi Akiva famously says, Zeh klal gadol ba'Torah, V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. that this one pasuk of V'ahavta l'recha kamocha encompasses all of the rest of Torah. However, the Maharal brings down a continuation to this conversation. The Maharal quotes from the Ein Yaakov, and he says, Shematza v'chibor midrash achad, ben zoma omer matzinu pasuk kolal yoter. He brings the continuation of this conversation, and he says, ben zoma says, I found a pasuk that is even more inclusive. V'hu Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Ben zoma says, the pasuk of Shema Yisrael, that is the most inclusive pasuk of the Torah. With that pasuk, we include everything else in the Torah. Okay? Ben Nanas Omer, Matsinu pasuk kolal yoter v'hu v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. Ben Nanas must have never heard the song before. He didn't realize that Rabbi Akiva already said v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. So Ben Nanas seconds Rabbi Akiva's quote of v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. However, then along comes Shimon ben Pazi Omer, Matsinu pasuk kolel yoter. I found an even more inclusive pasuk, more than Shema Yisrael, more than V'ahavta l'recha kamocha, more than Zeh Sefer Toldos Adam. And what is that pasuk? We're expecting like the pasuk of all pasukim here. V'hu Omer, v'hu et hakeves ha'achad ta'aseh baboker. The pasuk that explains the Karban Tamid. V'etakeves ha'achad ta'aseh baboker. Take one sheep and bring it in the morning. Amad Rav Ploni al reglav amar halacha k'ben pazi. It says Rav Ploni gets up. Some rabbi gets up and says, Ben Pazi, you've got it. You have found the most inclusive pasuk in the entire Torah. Why does that make any sense? If I were to ask each of you, or let's say I were to ask a room of 100 people, I can guarantee that we would get some suggestions if we were looking for the most inclusive pasuk in the Torah. I would definitely get some Shema Yisrael's. I would definitely get V'ahavta l'recha kamocha. I might get Bereishis bara Elokim et ha-shamayim et ha-aretz. I might get, I don't know, there's a lot of pasukim I'm pretty sure I would get. But I think it would take quite a number of people and quite a lot of asking until I got the suggestion of Etakeves Ha'achad Ta'aseh Baboker. Nobody would think that this pasuk is the most inclusive pasuk in the Torah, especially for us. We don't have a Karban Tamid. How can that possibly be the most inclusive pasuk in the Torah if today we can't even understand it? So the Maharal explains, and the Maharal says, why is this the most inclusive pasuk in the Torah? Why is everything subsumed underneath this pasuk of Etakeves Ha'achad Ta'aseh Baboker? And the Maharal says, because in our lives as Jewish people, as Ovdei Hashem, we are not meant to serve Hashem only through the grand Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad moments. We're not supposed to serve Hashem through the Bereishis bara Elokim et ha-shamayim et ha-aretz. These are grand. These are famous. These are big. These are psukim that make a splash. He said, our lives as Jews, our lives as true Ovdei Hashem, are centered around the times of Etakeves ha-achad ta'aseh baboker. It's the Karban Tamid. It's the regular, consistent serving Hashem that carries us through our religious lives. That it's about being consistent. It's not about these sudden flashes of inspiration. It's not about the grand moments, the big, exciting, inspirational kumzitzes. It's none of that. He says it's about etakeves ha'achad ta'aseh baboker. That majority of the Torah, we spoke about this when we talked about our five love languages. Majority of the Torah is focused on the everyday, the daily grind, the things that aren't so glamorous and aren't so exciting. Those are the times that we are true Ovdei Hashem. So the Maharal says that is what the essence of the Torah is the Karban Tamid. The Karban that wasn't flashy, that wasn't exciting. It was brought every single day, so consistently. And he said, that is the key to our Avodas Hashem. It's being those consistent Avdei Hashem, consistently doing what Hashem asks from us. To second this point, coming up in the next number of Parshiyot, we are going to learn about the Avot and the Imahu. And we first learn about Avram Avinu. And Avram Avinu was that exciting character. He was the idol smasher. He was the one who got up and left following God blindly to an unbeknownst location. He got up and there was the Lech Lecha, and then there was all the Nisyonot, and there was the going down to Egypt, and the coming up, and the Akidas Yitzchak. Avram's life is very exciting. Avram does all the big, grand, exciting things. He brought monotheism to the world. And then along comes Yitzchak Avinu. And what do we learn about Yitzchak Avinu? It says in Bereishis Chava, Vayishav Yitzchak ve'achbor et be'irat hamayim asher chafru b'mei Avraham Aviv. What is the big deal, the big thing we know about Yitzchak? Besides that he has twins. Twins are pretty exciting. But after that, we know that Yitzchak got up and redug the wells that his father had dug. Now, that's pretty boring, if you ask me. That Avram Avinu, like we said, he did everything exciting, and he dug those wells. He started cultivating the land, and he drew forth water. And Yitzchak just came along and redug already dug wells? Seems pretty boring and pretty lame. Why does the Torah even need to tell us that? And it's the same point. It's the same idea. That we needed an Avram Avinu. We needed the trailblazer. We needed the person to bring monotheism to the world. But without the daily grind, the simple, boring actions of Yitzchak Avinu, of redigging those wells, the wells would have been lost. There would have been no one to maintain what Avram Avinu had brought into the world. If we don't have those inspirational moments, if we don't have those Tishrei moments, the Elul, the intense tshuva, the hard work, the crying out to Hashem, if we don't have those deeply spiritual, growth-focused moments, we won't be fueled to start the year. But if we don't have the Yitzchak Avinus, the people that are willing to come along and maintain what was established before them, if we don't have months like the month of Cheshvan, a month that in and of itself doesn't have much excitement, but a month that allows us to put into practice what we dedicated ourselves to, what we established in the month of Tishrei, everything we put into, we thought that we are going to do in the month of Tishrei will not last. It will all be lost. If we are just jumping from grand inspirational moment to grand inspirational moment, we will never succeed in our Avodas Hashem. We need to balance those grand, exciting, deeply spiritual moments with the daily grind, with the karban tamid, with the consistency, the waking up every day, davening, going to school, davening mincha, going to more school, eating dinner, maybe davening marv? I don't know. The daily grind. We need those moments of consistency to put into place and to maintain the growth that we want to achieve. Rav Hirsch says, during Cheshvan is the month that we are able to see the fruit of everything that we've worked on in Tishrei. That Cheshvan is the month of application. Rav Moshe Weinberger, interestingly, connects this idea to the idea of the sin of Adam and Chava, and then of Cain and Hevel. After the sin of Cain and Hevel, Cain is cursed in the end of Bereishis Parak Daled. He says, Ki ta'avod et ha'adama, lo tosif tach kocha, lechna v'nad tihiya ba'aretz. Cain is cursed. He is cursed that he will constantly work the land. Ki ta'avod et ha'adama, lo tosif kochalach. You will continually work the land, but it will no longer give you its fruits. You will feel like you are working endlessly for nothing. Na v'nad tiye ba'aretz. You will be a wanderer. You will never settle in the land. And the Bechor Shor explains this and says, Lo tosif tach kochalach. What does it mean that the land will no longer give you its fruits? Umitoch kach. Na v'nad tihiyeh ba'aretz. The Bechor Shor connects this portion of the Pasuk, that the land will no longer give its fruits, to the second part of the Pasuk, which is na v'nad tihiyeh ba'aretz, that you will be a wanderer. He says, Ki derech b'nei adam kishezorin b'makum echad ve'ina mutzim sham bracha, hochim l'makum acher. He said, when a farmer farms in one area and doesn't find bracha there, doesn't find success, it is the way of planters to go find somewhere else to see if they can be more successful in another location. Ulayim to usham bracha, v'kein kayin holech v'ba, v'ulayim to makom ha'mitbarach. This became Kayin's life. He would go to one area and he would farm and he would dig and he would plant and it would be unsuccessful. So he would say, you know what? I didn't find bracha here. Let me go somewhere else. And he would go somewhere else and he would try again. He would sow and he would weed and he would plant and he would water. Again, no bracha. And that's how Kayin spent his entire life. Ramosha Weinberger said, this is how we are in our lives today. He said, Hashem cursed us that we will jump from place to place. We will try to put an effort in one place, but we don't find the pleasure in that effort. We don't find that hard work to be fulfilling. So when we try to go to one place and try to do a little something there and it's not successful, we can't really put in the hard work. We don't really do everything necessary. We don't stick in that location. Rather, we're always jumping to the next. That if we don't find that we enjoy one place, we jump to the next place. We try again there and we don't really put in the hard work because we don't enjoy the hard work. We just wish we could get past all of this hard work and just be successful. We want the fruits of the land without working the land. And that leads us to be navinatia ba'aretz. We're constantly going. We're constantly jumping from one location and we never feel settled. We never feel comfortable. And this idea can so directly relate to our relationships. A lot of times in our relationships, what we want is to jump from exciting moment to exciting moment. When we're dating, no, this is on a very small level. Nobody ever wants to have those phone calls in between dates because they're pretty much unbearably awkward. No matter how socially normal both of you are, those phone calls are just destined to be awkward. Nobody wants those like regular everyday conversations. You just want to get to like the fun, exciting date. Also, nobody in marriage, let's say, wants to have to go grocery shopping, to clean the toilets, to mop the floors, or to pay bills. You would rather go from like fun winter vacation to having a baby to making a simcha. People don't like the dull everyday grind. Nobody really wants to be engaged in the everyday. And Ramosha Weinberger said you can see this so clearly when it comes to parents with children. He said, unfortunately, and he believes this is the curse of Kayin, people do not find it fulfilling to simply raise children on the day-to-day. So many parents today want to be the parent at the bris, and they want to be the parent at the birthday parties, and they want to be the parent at the bar mitzvah, and in Eretz Hashem, they want to be the parent at the wedding. But how many parents really want to change all the diapers? The same holds true when we're dating, when we're getting married. So many educators and college teachers say that they so often get panicked calls from girls saying, I don't get it. Dating was so exciting. It was so fun. And like every moment was just so exciting. We were obsessed with each other and it was so exciting. And every minute we were taking pictures and we were having so much fun. And like everyone saw how happy we were. And like then we get married and then it's like, I don't know, like did we run out of things to talk about? Like is all of a sudden life so boring? And people are shocked and people are nervous because they say, wait, this just kind of seems like regular life. But that's the point. The point is that all of life cannot be those exciting moments. Actually, majority of life is the non-exciting moments. Majority of life is the cheshvans of life. If you think about it, there's quite a while between the bris and the first birthday and the bar mitzvah, and the wedding. No matter how advanced your kid is, those things take a while. Or sometimes there's a big gap in between dating, and then you get engaged, and then there's a while till your wedding, and then there's Shavuot Brachot, and then like, what's next? And that can be really hard when we're just looking for the next exciting moment, the next thrill. But when we realize that our true Avodas Hashem is the Karban Tamid, and our true role in life is to live through and enhance those everyday moments, that totally refocuses us. That it's not that dating my husband was so fun and then we got married and now we have bills to pay and dinner to make. It's, wow, I got to work on our relationship and establish our relationship through these fun, exciting, new activities and new things that we were doing and getting to know each other. And then I get to live every single day with my best friend. Like, then I have established that relationship. And now I'm comfortable and I feel secure and I have built a strong relationship in which our relationship is no weaker because we're now paying bills and scrubbing toilets. It might be a little less glamorous. Most people don't post pictures on Instagram of like their first floor mopping together, but like those are the real moments. And those are the moments that you feel that you're really connected to this person. Now you're in it together. Now you're moving through life together. Sorry, I keep jumping between Hashem and us and our dating, but it's all so connected. That during Tishrei, we're dating Hashem. We are reigniting our relationship with Hashem. We have the tshuva and returning to Hashem and dvikas b'Hashem, and we're calling out to Hashem and connecting to Him so closely. And Hashem loves us so much, and by Shemini Atzeret, He can't have us go. And we celebrate the Torah. We have the gift that Hashem gave us. Our bond is so tight. And then we move on to Cheshvan. And Cheshvan is the month of mopping the floor, washing the dishes, and cleaning the toilets. But we're doing it together with Hashem if we try our hardest. In the same way that we go through Shana Rishona with our husband, and it's not as glamorous as dating and engagement and wedding and Sheva Brachot, but it's real life. Scientists talk about that there are two phases to love. And there are a lot of hormones involved. And when it's the original infatuation stage, which is the first stage of love, it's a lot of serotonin, norepinephrine, and dopamine. These are similar hormones that are associated with people that have obsessive compulsive disorder. It's associated with a similar high you feel from cocaine. These feelings are addictive. They make you want more of them. You're obsessed with the other person, literally obsessed. These same chemicals going on in your brain as if you were obsessed with something else. You can't get enough of that person. But scientists say that if these feelings of obsession and of just constantly needing more and more and more of the other person, if those feelings last longer, they typically last between 18 months and 3 years. If they last longer than that, relationships can actually get stuck because you never move on to the second phase of love. The second phase of love, which is attachment. If you stay stuck in that original infatuation phase, which is the most exciting, you just feel so in love, you're so connected to the other person, and it's so exciting. But if you stay in that forever, you're never going to become truly attached to that other person. Because when we switch to attachment, there are totally different hormones associated with that. That's oxytocin and vasopressin. These are hormones that make you feel happy in the long run. It's not the same obsessive feelings. You feel like things have cooled down a little bit, that things are more relaxed, but you're also left with a deep feeling psychologically deep down in your brain that you can't live without the other person. I said to my husband once, it's a really weird thing. I used to have plans with a lot of people. Like, Baruch Hashem, I have a lot of friends. So like one day I would go do something with one friend. The next day I would go do something with the next friend. I don't know. Even think about like when you're away at school, you have breakfast with one friend, you eat lunch with another, and randomly you meet this guy. You decide that from now on, all your plans are going to be with one person. But like, not even just the exciting things, like, you just decide mutually that you're now going to eat every meal together for the rest of your lives. Now, that's never to say that you're not going to go out for lunch with your friends and you're not never going to eat breakfast or dinner or lunch alone. But it's a really weird concept when you think about it. that now I decided that for the rest of my life, for some reason, this person wants to eat with me. And they want to eat with me. And they want to share a room with me. And they want to share a whole house with me. And we are going to have all our plans together, which means we are going to do all our activities together. It's a really strange concept. But it's amazing. Because like we said, you build up that close, intimate, deep connection. But you can't live in that. You can't constantly be running around from date to date, from everything exciting. You can't live in Sheva Brachot your whole life. You'd collapse. You move along and you move into regular everyday life. And you say to that person, I want you in my life. I want you in the very regular, nitty gritty, dry parts of my life. And that is an amazing feeling. David HaMelech davens in LeDavid, which we just finished saying after so long. David HaMelech says, Horeini Hashem Darkecha. Hashem, show me your way. What does that mean? It could be just Hashem, give me your mitzvot, give me your Torah. However, it can also be explained, Horeini Hashem Darkecha. Your way, not your destination. Hashem, don't just teach me about the destination, Hashem. Hashem, Horeini Hashem Darkecha. Show me how to go along the path along with you, Hashem. Hashem, I know that the Torah you gave us, the religion you gave us, is not a religion focused on our destination. It's a religion focused on the derech, on the path, on the journey. Hashem, show us how to journey along with you. So what does this have to do? Let's connect it back to the beginning. We said that Cheshvan is this month of consistency, of putting into effect everything we decided. And in our relationships, it's the same way. We can't live in the excitement, the inspiration. We have to move on. We have to put them into play. We have to get down to the nitty gritty and live our everyday lives together with our best friend. We have to live our lives together with Hashem. Horeini Hashem Darkecha. But what does this have to do with the events that we said took place in Cheshvan? And I would like to say that each of them is so closely connected to this deeper meaning of Mar Cheshvan. Let's start with the Mabul. What happened in the Mabul? In the Mabul, we know that the people of the world had become so corrupt. But it doesn't say that the people of the earth had become heretics. It didn't say they didn't believe in Hashem. It says Malai Ha'arat Zima, that the earth was corrupt, that they were stealing from one another. They were acting immorally towards one another. They didn't know how to interact with other people in a meaningful way. They were stealing. They were taking things that did not belong to them. They did not understand how to live in this world in an elevated way. They corrupted the base of humanity, which is respect for others. Therefore, Hashem says, we need to start again. We cannot build from a world that doesn't understand this basic concept that religion and an elevated life is not just about talking about God, thinking about God. Religion and living our lives properly is based on how we act during our everyday lives. It's about the monetary rules. It's about how we interact with other people. And if they can't understand this, I need to destroy the world. But Hashem destroys the world in a very specific way. Hashem cleanses the world. Water, we know, is purifying. Hashem says, you guys missed the point. You didn't realize that every aspect of your life must be elevated, and therefore I'm going to purify the situation that is currently on earth. I'm going to wash everything out, cleanse it with water, and we'll start again. And he started again with Noah, who he said he was a tzaddik. He was separated from these actions, and therefore he cleansed the rest of the world, and Noah and his family restarted the world. So the Mabul was showing us that Hashem says, realize during the month of Cheshvan, we can't live a life where we separate our everyday life from our religion. Let's cleanse it and start again. So that's the month of Cheshvan and how it connects to the Mabul. Next, Rachel Imenu. What does Rachel Imenu's passing have to do with the month of Cheshvan? And we often say that their yahrzeit is the time that we focus on their personality. So not specifically the death of Rachel Imenu, but the life of Rachel Imenu. How does that connect to our concept? And what I would like to suggest is that Rachel and Yaakov Avinu had the epitome of a Cheshvan relationship. If you look at when Rachel and Yaakov first meet, they meet at the Be'er. Yaakov has run away, and he arrives at this well and he sees that there is a rock on top of the well. He takes it off to impress Rachel. He gives Rachel to drink. And then it says, Yaakov sees Rachel, Vayishik Yaakov l'Rachel, v'yisa kolo v'yivch. It's love at first sight. Rachel and Yaakov, they embrace. This is definitely not a relationship lesson. They kiss, they hug. It's love at first sight. However, then we know Rachel and Yaakov definitely do not marry at that point. At the point of the height of their love at first sight, the excitement. No, they are the relationship that they have to work the hardest. Yaakov says, I will work for Rachel for 7 years. And we all know what happens after 7 years. After 7 years, Leah marries Yaakov instead of Rachel. And Yaakov has to work another 7 years to marry Rachel. He's able to marry her before then, but he has to work another 7 years to earn it. That's a relationship of work. And it says in Perek Chavtet, Vayavod Yaakov b'Rachel sheva shanim, vayhu b'einav ki yamim achadim b'havoto oto. It says that Yaakov Avinu had to work so hard for Rachel. But to him, it felt like one day because he realized that that work was not detracting from his love for Rachel. Rather, that work was only making their love stronger. That because he loved Rachel so much and they worked on their love so much during that time, it felt like one day because the love grew and grew. It didn't feel like hard work and separated from the love. It was all one. So Yaakov and Rachel had the epitome of this type of cheshvan relationship, that it started so strong. It started like Tishrei with the inspiration. And then it took a turn and it was so focused on the work and the hard work and the tough times, but it was only strengthened through that. So during the month of cheshvan, we remember Rachel, who is our role model in this type of cheshvan relationship. And lastly, why will the third Beis HaMikdash be dedicated in cheshvan? There is a debate about whether we have a requirement to build the third Beis HaMikdash or whether the Beis HaMikdash will come down from Shemayim fully formed. The Rambam believes that we have an obligation to build the Mikdash, and it is assumed that Rashi believes, based on a discussion in the Gemara and Sukkah about when you are able to build the Mishkan, when you're able to build the Mikdash, that Rashi believes that we will not build it ourselves. Rather, the Mikdash will come down from Shemayim fully formed. So Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, in his Sefer Aruch LaNer, he tries to make these two opinions work with each other. He tries to prove that the Rambam and Rashi do not actually disagree. And he says, Lefi divrei Rashi, mehira yigala Beis HaMikdash. Rashi says, soon we hope that the Beis HaMikdash will be revealed. V'ma she'anu mepalim b'chol tfilatinu, yihi raton she'yibana Beis HaMikdash b'mehira b'yaminu. Yu tfilot shav, kiban she'gvar nivnehu. So Rav Yaakov Ettlinger says, but every single day, if Rashi believes that the Beis HaMikdash is fully formed, it is waiting for us in Shemayim, and when we're ready, it is going to descend on the earth, he says, then why do we daven every single day, Mehera Yibane HaMikdash, that Hashem should build the Mikdash? Isn't the Mikdash just sitting up there waiting to come down? Rather, we should say, Rather, we should daven that the Beis HaMikdash should be revealed soon. Vilachin, Hayulin Laniastati, Divadai Beis HaMikdash La'atid Lavo, Yibanev Binyan Mamish, Bidei Adam. He says, it is clear according to me that both Rashi and the Rambam agreed that the Beis HaMikdash is going to be built by the hands of man. Vimash Ne'amar, Mikdash Hashem Koninu Yadecha. Well, as we know, the quote that Mikdash Hashem Koninu Yadecha, we prepared the Mikdash of Hashem. Shenidrash b'tanchuma sheyarad lamata hu beis hamikdash ruchani sheyavol l'toch beis hamikdash hanivneh gashmi k'neshama b'toch haguf. So he says, what is Rashi saying that the Beis HaMikdash is going to come down from Shemayim fully formed? He says, everyone agrees. We have an obligation to build the Mikdash. We have to take those materials. We have to take the gold and the silver and the wood, and we have to build that Mikdash with our own two hands, our hard work, our blood, sweat, and tears. And then what do we daven for? We daven that the spiritual Mikdash that Hashem has been constructing in heaven will descend on this structure that we built and will elevate it to a godly being. So if you look at the Beis HaMikdash through that lens, then the Beis HaMikdash is the epitome of the Cheshvan model, that we have to put in the hard work. It's not like we just expect a miracle. It would be much more exciting if we pictured when we're three that the Beis HaMikdash will come flying down from Shemayim and plop itself, smosh the dome, plop itself on Har HaBayit, and be so exciting, be so grand. It's a lot less exciting to think about years and years of regular everyday people gathering the materials, maybe they bought them at Home Depot, I don't know, and building that mikdash. It's a lot less exciting. But when we think about it, that we have the power to build the shell for a godly building that Hashem has been constructing at the same time as us, that's an incredible opportunity and incredible responsibility. That this mikdash must be comprised by the hard work of both of us. That Hashem is building the spiritual building while we're building the physical building. And only if we go through that hard work, that toil, that daily activity of building up that mishkan, the blood, sweat, and tears, will Hashem then drop in the spiritual aspect. Will it then become the makum hamikdash? Will it be the most godly place in the entire world? So my message for Cheshvan is that each of these things, the mabul, the cleansing of the world, the relationship of Yaakov Avinu and Rachel Imenu, the idea that we daven, that the Beis HaMikdash, that we would love to return to the world, that we will get this building that is a perfect combination of our efforts and Hashem's bestowing his grace upon us, that will come during the month of Cheshvan. And that's because the month of Cheshvan is this month of actualization. It's the month of putting everything into practice. It's the month of the hard work, the regular daily grind. And my bracha is that we should be zocha to take everything from what we gained in the month of Tishrei, all the inspiration, all of the hard work that we put in, all of the work on our relationship with Hashem. We should take those moments, and in our personal moments, we should have those exciting dates, those fun, romantic outings, in Ritz Hashem, we should be zocha to have the engagements and the weddings and the Sheva Brachot. But then we should truly have the bracha of being able to spend our everyday with our best friend. Whether it's in our physical relationships, our human relationships, or whether it's our relationship with Hashem. That we recognize that Hashem is with us through the daily grind. So may we take that inspiration and be able to actualize it and put it into play in the month of Cheshvan. Chodesh Tov, everyone.